We are not in good shape at this point in time. If trade tensions continue to increase, we could see an even more significant dampening effect on the global economy and trade expansion.
Is the loser in the current trade war going to be China, the US, or the international trading system? Welcome to Vox Talks from the Center for Economic Policy Research. My name is Tim Phillips. Now, a couple of weeks ago, we spoke to David Weinstein about his calculations of the cost of the 2018 trade war, but we're not going to be talking about percentages and pass-throughs today. Instead, we're going to be focusing on the political economy of this trade war, and one aspect of it in particular. Is this the end of the line for the World Trade Organization as the forum to settle trade disputes? And who might be pleased if it was? Here to guide us through this is Chad Bown. He's a senior fellow at the Peterson Institute for International Economics. He's also a CEPR fellow. And we've borrowed him for a day from the excellent Trade Talks podcast, which is well worth a listen every week, but not until you finish listening to Vox Talks. Chad, welcome to our side of the fence.
Thanks for having me.
At the centre of the story we're telling here is the World Trade Organization. Most of us sort of know what it does, but can you explain how, in an ideal world, it functions?
The way I think about the WTO is it essentially does three big things. Mm-hmm. The first is it provides a forum for all the major countries of the world to get together to negotiate over stuff. So the big important things they're negotiating over are trade liberalization, cutting their tariffs, getting rid of quotas, and negotiating new rules, that kind of thing. The second and probably least understood is it's actually also a very important forum for transparency. So countries notify each other when they're making smaller changes to their trade policies to let them know that things are happening so that they're not surprised. But the third and this other really, really big one is it's a forum for its members to settle disputes. And so when one country disagrees that one of these trade policies that a partner has imposed is okay, you know, it thinks that, hey, you know, you've done something that's actually hurt my exporters. It doesn't just go off and retaliate over that. This system creates a place where you can bring grievances forward and have a judicial process to have the arguments heard out and settled judiciously.
All eyes at the moment are on the US-China trade war, but there's a lot of analysis, both research and in the press, and it focuses on the headline tariff barriers. And in your work, you seem to be making the point that if we just look at those tariff changes, we might be missing the real story that's going on underneath, which is how special protectionist measures chip away at the WTO's ability to keep markets open. Am I right?
Exactly. So one of the very effective things that the World Trade Organization and its predecessor, the General Agreement on Tariffs and Trade, or the GATT, before it have done is they have facilitated the ability of the big countries of the world to cut their tariffs. And so we do see very, very low tariffs today compared to historical levels. The U.S. tariff on imports coming in from China is 3% or so, and China's tariff on imports coming in from the United States is around 8-9% or so, very, very low. But that's not all of the protection that there is out there. Mm. One of the other things that the WTO does is it sets out rules, but some of those rules are basically exceptions. They're ways in which countries are allowed to impose special forms of protection under different types of circumstances. And one of the major forms of special protection that we've seen crop up over the last 15, 20 years or so is special protection aimed at China. So basically, since its entry into the World Trade Organization, you've seen anti-dumping duties, countervailing duties, anti-subsidy tariffs, effectively trying to stop imports from China from coming into different markets. This is true in the United States, in Europe, and lots of different countries around the world. So some people might say, well, you know, this is a problem with China's state-driven economy, and this is symptomatic of that. Other folks would say, you know, these special tariffs, they do chip away at the WTO's ability to keep trade barriers low, but this is part of the cost of doing business. If you're going to have low tariffs in general, you need to have some of these special exemptions, these special tariffs, to allow countries to stop imports when problematic situations arise here or there. But that definitely has been what's happening over the last few years, especially.
One of the problems, though, with what the US is doing at the moment is the exception that it's using, which is national security, which seems very odd considering what the tariffs are.
And that's exactly right. And so historically, the United States has used these other types of special tariffs that are more acceptable within the system, dealing with low-priced imports, anti-dumping tariffs, or subsidized imports, the countervailing duties, the anti-subsidy imports. But this time around, the Trump administration is going to a different exception, and that is causing a problem. They're claiming that imports of products like steel and aluminum are a threat to national security and imposing tariffs there. And they also have an ongoing investigation into whether imports of automobiles and parts and trucks might actually be a threat to national security there as well. But yes, this is quite unheard of in the trading system, and this is one of the challenges now facing the WTO.
On the other side of this, as you set out in a paper you wrote for the CEPR, I'll give everyone the reference to that at the end, you set out that China has used quite sophisticated protectionist measures without explicitly breaking the rules of the WTO. You use the example of aluminium, I think you call it, and the global effects of what China has done to protect its markets at the expense of everybody else.
Yeah, so everybody's probably familiar of the aluminum story because this is one of these sectors that the Trump administration has imposed these national security tariffs on. But part of their argument is that what they're trying to do is address what's a different problem, which is China's state-driven model of promoting and sustaining its domestic aluminum industry. And the concern is that China doesn't do this in ways that market-oriented economies might. It's not as if the Chinese government just writes a check to aluminum companies in China and gives them direct subsidies. China has a very complicated set of indirect subsidies. And so there's a very nice recent report that the OECD has put out that's explained this in great detail. China provides subsidies of implicit form in various points. So they might provide subsidies at the very beginning of the process that's very energy intensive. So they subsidize the input costs of coal. And in the primary aluminum production, so this is the basics of the aluminum that you need to make all the downstream finished goods, the Chinese government doesn't actually allow the Chinese firms to be able to export those types of products to the world. They have export restrictions on those. They also don't rebate value-added taxes for those. And instead, what that leads to is subsidies, implicit subsidies, for all of the downstream manufacturing companies within China that might use that primary aluminum to make chairs or window frames or other things that are used throughout the economy. So the WTO system, I think the United States would argue, isn't well-positioned to deal with these types of subsidies. It hasn't been able to stop them to date. Earlier attempts at using tariffs, whether they were the anti-dumping sorts of tariffs, the anti-subsidy sorts of tariffs, hadn't worked. And so the Trump administration turned to something else, which was this national security story.
To be clear on this, though, what China's done, although a lot of people might find it very inconvenient, it's very hard to make a legal case that they've done anything explicitly against WTO rules.
That's the really big question and the one to which we don't know the answer. I think the current U.S. administration would argue that there aren't explicit rules that China is breaking, and therefore it would be very, very difficult to file a WTO dispute against China over these sorts of issues and win. Other folks might argue, no, there is the possibility that you could file a different sort of complaint against China. There's a special clause, actually, in the WTO's dispute rulebook called non-violation complaints, where you can make the argument that, well, China hasn't broken any explicit rules, but what it's doing is really working against the spirit of the agreement, and it's causing economic damage to other countries. And so there is the possibility here that you could file this type of argument and potentially win. The issue is we haven't seen a lot of these disputes historically being brought forward, and for good reason. They're really hard to win, but that's essentially where we are. The United States, other countries have been hesitant to bring these kinds of challenges against China. And so they have essentially given up on the WTO's dispute settlement ability to constrain these kinds of behavior.
So is the fundamental problem here that the WTO, as it is constituted in its current form, was built to help market economies cooperate on trade, and now it's having to deal with sophisticated bad actors, and it doesn't really have the processes or the mechanisms to do that?
Yeah, I'm not sure I would call everything that China's doing necessarily a bad actor. They just have a different system. They're definitely not a market economy. In many respects, their system has worked for raising and lifting hundreds of millions of people out of poverty, leading their economic development. But it does seem like a system that has certain incompatibilities with market-oriented systems like what's in the United States or Europe. Yeah. And this is what's posing a fundamental challenge to the trading system that we have today. The trading system, the WTO, seems incapable, at the moment at least, of being able to resolve.
This type of behavior, I mean, it's nothing new, is it? It's been going on for years. So does the US's dissatisfaction with the WTO also predate the Trump regime, and it's only just now that it's hit the headlines?
There is a lot of dissatisfaction with the World Trade Organization that has been building up on the United States side even before the Trump administration. Certainly these problems concerning China and its failure to evolve as a market economy were going to materialize regardless of who the U.S. president ended up being after the 2016 election. Mm. There were other areas of dissatisfaction on the dispute settlement system itself. A number of legal rulings that the WTO had made over the last 15 or 20 years or so against the United States in particular areas had been questioned by earlier administrations, including by the Obama administration, even the Bush administration, this concern over what's called judicial overreach. The WTO judges effectively trying to read more into the rules than was actually agreed or negotiated by the earlier negotiators. So I think this is an area of concern. The tactics of the Trump administration are new, and that's what's different. But there has been some of this undercurrent of concern going on for years, and even in the United States.
So in the big picture, this change in tactics, is it perhaps not just about bashing China, making China change, but is also targeted at the WTO and making it change as well?
I do think that that's a big part of what's going on. Some of the complaints and some of the tactics the Trump administration is using, whether it's using national security tariffs as an exception instead of the more acceptable forms of tariffs, whether they be safeguards or anti-dumping or these anti-subsidy duties, that's new. The Trump administration, the other big thing that they're doing at the WTO is they're holding up the appointment of members to the WTO's appellate body. This is their sitting body of appeals court judges, effectively, that can review cases. Earlier administrations had noted problems with those judges and some of the decisions that they're making, but the Trump administration's tactics of actually holding up the appointment of new judges, and very soon, by the end of 2019, there could be so few of these judges that the WTO won't be able to issue rulings in the same way that it has before. This is a source of underlying discontent that the United States has.
Donald Trump famously tweeted out that trade wars are easy to win. So what does winning mean in this context? What's the US government going to be happy with? I guess also we are entering an election cycle. Winning might also help Trump be reelected. So what's he going to want?
That's what's still completely unclear. The Trump administration has been very clear about what it is that they dislike and what it is that they don't want. They dislike multilateralism. They dislike rules-based trade. They dislike non-discriminatory treatment, the inability to throw their weight around in the trading system. But they have never articulated the type of a system that they would want to have to potentially replace the existing one if the existing one were to collapse. So I think that is a really big open question. Is all of this just theatrics and for political purposes for the president, or is there some underlying strategy to create a new system that would replace the existing one? If there is, we just haven't seen any hint of what that thing might actually look like.
But do you think that if that system, the multilateral system, did collapse, that the US administration might actually be quite happy about that?
Yes and no. No, in the sense that the US trade representative, so President Trump's chief architect for the trade strategy, has said that if the World Trade Organization weren't out there, we would need something essentially to replace it. Mm. So at that level, this is Ambassador Robert Lighthizer, he has recognized and stated that there is value and utility to the WTO in what it is that it does. That being said, they're making a lot of decisions, whether it's these national security tariffs, whether it's acting unilaterally against China with $250 billion worth of tariffs, whether it's threatening how the dispute settlement functions of the WTO work. The actions that they're choosing are threatening the system in and of itself.
We've looked at the big picture there. Let's have a look at the small picture here as economists. Do you think if we just follow the money and think about this in terms of surpluses and deadweight losses, we might actually be missing the point of the whole thing here?
I would agree to that. I think probably within the economics profession, there hasn't been enough attention or appreciation paid to the role that these international institutions like the World Trade Organization and the trade rules play. Obviously, there's some notable exceptions. This has been a major area of scholarship amongst a relatively small set of researchers over the last 20 years or so. I think now that the Trump administration and these conflicts have called a lot of this in question, there's going to be more people working on these issues. But I do think that a lot of the value of what a stable international trading system actually provides for the world has gone underappreciated and undermeasured and misunderstood, perhaps, by even the economics profession in and of itself.
I suppose some of the problem with this, Chad, is that the economic models of trade that we have don't capture the full range of actions or measure the impacts. So we're modeling the things that we can measure at the moment.
That's certainly true. I think this is a constant challenge that the profession faces and that we're continually striving to do better at, whether it's better integrating trade rules and the benefits of those and these institutions into our models, or even just better integrating how the real world of trade operates and the fact that trade amongst firms might be very different from just thinking about industries, or trade with complex global supply chains that are prevalent today may be very different from how the world looked 20 or 30 years ago. I think we're making a lot of progress along each of these dimensions. But in the special case of the trading system, I do think that economists could and probably should be able to make a more clear case for what the benefits of a sustainable, non-discriminatory, rules-based trading system actually provide to the world.
I'm not going to let you escape, Chad, without giving me some kind of view of the future. So your best guess, what could happen at the end of this? What's most likely to happen?
Well, what could happen at this stage is almost anything. As we record this, yeah. President Trump and President Xi of China are still negotiating potentially a resolution to the trade war that started in 2018 with tariffs that now sit on more than $360 billion worth of trade between the two countries. Recent threats have been made that that could substantially increase even beyond those current levels. We're still uncertain as to whether that's going to lead to a negotiated outcome or if things are going to get worse, both in the near term or in the long term. As for the future of the World Trade Organization, we do have this deadline of December 2019, at which point the current three remaining judges sitting at the appellate body, two of them will have their terms expire, and you need to have at least three to be able to adjudicate one of these cases. And at that point in time, we could be left with a very different functioning way of resolving disputes between countries that come up. And I think the big concern in that forum is dispute settlement under the WTO has provided a way for countries to resolve little tiny trade frictions, to prevent those from turning into big, full-on, blown-out trade wars. And the concern is if that existing system disappears, and we don't know what any future system might look like to replace it, any little skirmish between countries could actually end up bubbling up, and the trade war that we've seen of 2018 could become a new permanent feature of trade relationships between not just the United States and China, but take any two countries out there in the world. And that's a world I think a lot of folks are very, very worried about being a part of.
And as we know from history, trade conflicts very often turn into other types of conflict as well. It is remarkable, isn't it, that we are even contemplating a post-WTO world. We wouldn't really have thought we would be in this position only a few years ago.
That's exactly right. I think we've taken a lot for granted, and I think we do have to be worried about if this system, as we have seen it evolve in the last 20 or so years, if it disappears, what is going to be the thing that replaces it? And is it going to be able to do as good a job at keeping relatively harmonious trade relations between countries and not allowing it to turn into something that's much more problematic?
Chad Bown, thank you very much.
Thanks for having me.
If you want to learn more about this topic, Chad's just published a CEPR discussion paper that I mentioned earlier. It's number 13695, if you'd like to look it up that way, and it's called The 2018 US-China Trade Conflict After 40 Years of Special Protection. And next month, look out for another piece that Chad's written. It's specifically on dispute resolution. It's in a forthcoming CEPR ebook called Trade Wars. This has been a Fox Talk from the Centre for Economic Policy Research. We're here every Friday, so subscribe on your podcast platform or visit www.voxeu.org/fox-talks.